This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
Short-term accommodation services like Airbnb and Stays started out as disruptors, and many were happy to see them shake up the industry. But now, Rish, they're causing some headaches, particularly as we head into a busy summer tourism season.
They certainly are. Some customers have been left fighting for refunds, for cancelled bookings, and hosts now are able to put in place their own cancellation policies. And get this, there's no consumer law covering you, which means a lot of people have been left frustrated and out of pocket. It's actually, Jono, become such a big problem in the United States that short stays accommodation disputes are clogging up their legal system there.
Yeah, and then there's, of course, the issue of housing availability. COVID has increased the amount of people buying in regional and coastal areas and then renting them out, renting those places out as short stays. And now some locals are feeling like they're being pushed out of their own towns. And so these so-called disruptors are now contributing to problems like homelessness and the rental squeeze.
What's interesting is that it does mean that people would stay in small towns, Jono, that previously have had no accommodation. Little towns like Locke, for example, I'm sure would be loving short stays. So it does have some positives. But in some areas, has the gloss worn off? And do laws need to change? Or do they simply need to play catch-up when it comes to short stays accommodation? They play a huge part in our lives. Not only locally, but when we could travel globally. But maybe it's time to see some changes to this industry.
And I know a lot of people will be thinking about holidays and thinking about where they're going to spend their holidays and maybe booking some accommodation. So should we be trying to keep everyone happy and maybe putting limits on the number of short stay properties in some areas, in some of those holiday areas? Or do we need stronger consumer law protections for guests? Or should there just be one consistent cancellation policy across all of the platforms? What changes would you like to see in short stay accommodation?
It did start out as a disruptor. I can actually almost remember when things like Airbnb first came about and a girlfriend and a colleague of mine said, I'm going to Italy, but I'm just staying in someone's house. And I was like, what? How does that work? And now it is really just a part of our everyday lives. But short stays, as we said, Jono, are causing a lot of problems. And a lot of that's got to do with the fact that there are no laws and regulations around this.
Yeah. And just a lack of consistency. And I guess that the hosts can choose their own cancellation policy as well, which has been a pretty widely criticised policy. But I remember, I'm the same as you, Rish. I remember when I first chatted to a bloke from Sydney and he said, oh no, I just Airbnb my house out while I'm away. And I thought, what, you have someone staying in your house? Like, how do you feel about that?
And he was fine. Do they go through your pantry?
Exactly. Yeah. And he was fine about it. And but now things are starting to change.
Well, those changes, some of them only happened at the beginning of lockdown. But Amelia Turson, ABC Business Reporter. Amelia, this is something that you've been really looking into. And the industry is huge now. It's no longer this small disruptor. And it feels like there is no kind of law governing this area. What have you started, my friend?
I just want to jump in with saying there that my first Airbnb was in a unit in Nepal. It was before Airbnb was even in Australia. And I had the same experience as you. It was like this strange, novel idea. And now what it's turned into, as you said there, is this huge industry that is not really regulated. Airbnb itself, it's worth $150 billion. And essentially, it's just become a stand-in now for rental homes or beach homes. And so investigating this story in terms of the refund situation, there is no consumer law that says if you book somewhere and then you have to cancel at X time before, or if there's a government order because of this pandemic, there's no law that says what happens to the cash that you've paid for. Instead, these websites like Airbnb and Stays and Ripperide, they essentially consider themselves third-party hosting websites, even though they make very significant service fees off this. They essentially consider themselves as websites where a person who has their unit lists it online and then someone, us, books that Airbnb. And they say that host has any discretion to pick from a range of different policies with refunds. Stays, when I approached them about this idea, they even said that it's really not even their job to mediate if you have issues. They said that, yeah, we might mediate if there's really a problem, but essentially they can't do anything.
Yeah.
So that leaves people in this situation where they can't really claw back their money.
Now, Amelia, I just want to clear something up for you about the consumer law, because you said consumer law doesn't cover these disputes around the cancellation policy, but in other aspects of a short stay like this, and we are going to catch up with a lawyer later this hour to kind of get some clarification on some of the legalities of this, but are you covered in any way by consumer law when you book a short stay?
Well, all that I found evidence of from the consumer watchdog, the ACCC, is that there are guidelines with how third-party websites should deal with cancellations. There are, of course, classic consumer laws, which is if you pay for something and you don't get what you paid for, there's a way to challenge for that system. But yes, when it comes to refunds, clawing back cash because you couldn't go because there was a border closure, there is no legality really to catch up with that. And this isn't just a problem with short-term rentals. It's also a problem with airline tickets during the pandemic, hotels, all sorts of things. It's actually worth noting there's a review currently into the travel industry because of this issue. Because there is no set rules.
We're actually seeing a resurgence of travel agents, an industry that we thought would die out during COVID. And now all of a sudden that industry is coming back because people are like, can someone else just handle this for me, please? Because this is all getting far
it's a lot
too
of
complicated.
Work. It's a lot of work.
It really is. Ross Matheson is an Airbnb customer and is actually someone that you've spent some time with, Amelia. Ross, welcome to the Conversation Hour. So you had a refund refused. Talk us through, without obviously naming people, talk us through what happened.
We just wanted to have a pleasant weekend away in a central Victorian town. Things were looking okay COVID-wise. We thought we might get there with that. So we booked an Airbnb. It looked like it was about the last one in town. So when we saw it was available, we jumped on it.
Hey, Ross, this is something that lots of people have happened to them, don't they? You think that, I'm not going to bother reading the fine print because I just want to go. That was kind of how you were feeling when you described the situation to me, hey?
Sure. You never think it's going to happen to you. You think everything's going to be fine. And like I said, it was the last one that I could find, and looked like, I needed to get it. So we booked it. Lockdown was called almost immediately.
It was literally the next day, wasn't it? The snap lockdown that turned into a 3-month one.
Yeah. And I approached the host for a refund, which I assumed would be the reasonable thing to do. And I was met with the response that I shouldn't worry about lockdown, that I should just travel up there from Melbourne on the train, that the train would be empty, I wouldn't be challenged, or we wouldn't be challenged, ignoring the fact that if we did bob there, that businesses were required to see our ID before they could service. So it would have been great sitting in our Airbnb for the weekend doing nothing.
Hey, Ross, how did you feel when he wrote that to you? I think you described a few different words when I asked you last week.
Clean.
I was quite annoyed. So many issues there. He was encouraging me to break the law, to fulfil our booking. It seemed to me that he wasn't, that was the only option he was giving us.
Ross, did you feel like in the end that, in life, if you have an issue, let's say with a shop or, some kind of service provider, if you're getting your car service or whatever it is, and you're having difficulty with that particular business, there's somewhere you can go or there's a body governing it and you feel like there will be someone that has your back. Did you feel like you were supported, or was there any external body that you thought you could call and say, hey, look, I'm having these issues, what should I do next?
Well, I went straight to the ACCC website when this happened, and pretty quickly found out that there was no law covering it, that the host's cancellation policy was what I signed up for, and that's what I got.
And how much money did you lose, Ross?
There were four of us going just for one night. It was $350, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
And Ross, one of the things that intrigued me about your experience was because the booking wasn't fulfilled, you could never leave feedback on this man's page, could you? And this is something I've
had people just email
me about this morning.
Yes, I've heard that a lot, actually, that there are clauses around, and anecdotally I've had people with similar experiences that say, we'll give you your money back, but you need to sign this and not leave us a review. You know, you can't leave us a bad review. So putting caveats around why and how you get your money back.
Mm. And Ross, do you think the argument that, well, you signed this thing, you signed over this cash and the policy was exactly this, do you buy this?
Sorry, how do you mean?
Do you buy the argument that essentially the terms and conditions is what you signed up for during COVID?
Well, it was news to me. We've never really had to cancel very much in our moderate experience of staying away, you know, and it seems that there should be some kind of consumer law covering it to me.
Mm. Yeah, Ross, thank you so much for telling your story, because I don't think you're alone, unfortunately. And Ali is in Beaconsfield. G'day, Ali. What's your situation?
Hi. I use one of the online booking agents to book a two-bedroom, fully self-contained, you know, apartment with a couch, a TV and cutlery. And when we turned up, it didn't have a couch, it had a beanbag, there were no TVs and there was no cutlery, no pots, no pans or anything like that.
So, cutlery, what sort of fancy person are you, Ali?
and you know, not even a plastic cup. So we tried to get hold of the booking agent and, of course, could not find a contact number anywhere. And when you went to the FAQs, it said, please raise everything with the owner. So we rang up the owner. The owner says, oh, no, there was cutlery in there when we left it with you. So anyway, they turned up with a television that didn't work. I had two very, very small children. By this stage, it's 8 o'clock at night. So we decided to stay the night, left the following morning, and then put a claim through with the booking agent and ended up having a fight for about 6 months. But I ended up getting back not my accommodation, but all my costs for getting the meals that we had to have.
Oh, okay.
Kitchen.
So that's a good result.
Yes,
so did you get all of the money back, or was it just the meals that you got?
Just the meals, I think about $20 for inconvenience.
I see. I apologize. I thought you actually got that back, plus you got the extra cost. This is the thing, Ali, isn't it? And Amelia, I know this is what you've been looking into. When you go to make a complaint, there's kind of no one that you can go to. I mean, there's text here. Ian in Brunswick says, disruption, is that the new word for tax evasion and sidestepping regulations?
Yeah.
People do feel a little bit like that, and we don't want this to be, I guess, a bashing hour towards short stays accommodation, because there are a lot of incredible hosts that do the right thing and are making wonderful experiences for people. But the fact is, they're kind of left to their own devices.
Yeah, and there is just on that term disruption, I mean, there was someone here saying on the text line, could you please define disruptor? And loosely, this is my, you know, Jono's definition of a disruptor, but a business or a business idea that comes into an established industry that kind of shakes things up and has a new or slightly modified business plan or a way of doing things. And so a lot of the time they're welcomed, but not necessarily all the time. And the good thing about what Ali was just talking about, you know how she said she stayed one night, at least then, Amelia, she's got the ability to leave a review, which we were talking about before.
Exactly. I find that really intriguing, though, that she was essentially not given what she paid for and still struggled to use the law to claw back cash. As I mentioned before, there are technically laws that say if you don't get what you pay for, you can challenge it. But who? Do you go to the consumer watchdog? Do you have to hire a lawyer to climb back?
And
you know,
how many times have you heard people say, well, who's going to go through with that? That's going to cost me money. And a lot of the times too, people take that into account. They're like, well, look, we can be a little bit dodgy here because the fact is, who's going to take me to VCAT about this? Yeah. Who can be bothered? But there's a text here that said, well, I just made an Airbnb booking. I have to say the cancellation policy was very transparent. If we can't travel for COVID reasons, we will not be refunded. I feel like they've been upfront and I've made this booking with my eyes open. Glenys is an Airbnb host. She's in Queenscliff. Glenys, I hope you feel like we're sort of we're not jumping on hosts here at the moment.
I've met Glenys and she is a very lovely Airbnb host, Glenys. I was really heartwarmed when I met you because you have this policy where essentially you've been clawing everyone's money back, even though you don't have to. Tell us about why you've decided to go with that policy.
Well, Airbnb at the very beginning of the COVID situation gave us the opportunity to contact them direct as hosts and request full refunds for our guests if they were affected by immediate lockdowns or weren't able to travel. And I've done that with all my guests. I think we discussed, Amelia, that there was 76 bookings that were cancelled in the last 22 months, which equated to about 194 nights. So I had to deal with the majority of those to give them full refunds, and that was really our policy here.
And that was incredibly stressful for you, wasn't it? Having to reply and go to Airbnb and contact these people, and you don't get paid for that issue, do you?
No, you don't get paid for it. But Queenscliff's sort of a destination. I mean, we have lots of weddings and bookings and birthdays and reunions, etc. So a lot of these people were coming down for events and functions, and I felt that it was only fair that they get their money back, because if I was in that situation, I would expect that myself. So we've always opted to have a fully flexible refund policy, which means the guests have to cancel 24 hours before check-in to get a full refund, usually. But, I mean, we had people that were on the freeway coming down to Queenscliff and messaged me and said, we're going into lockdown now, so we're turning around and going home. Well, of course I'm going to support them in that.
Oh, good on you, Glenys. Have you lost money because of that relaxed cancellation policy?
Yeah, I guess so. But then it swings and roundabouts, because when the state government then announced that they were giving $200 to anyone that travelled regionally, as long as they spent $400, we were just booked out with regional guests. So, you know, one door closes and another one opens. And we had very happy regional guests because there were no Melbourne people in town. It was quiet. They were able to still go into our cafes and restaurants and retail outlets and enjoy the environment, yeah. Mm.
David is in Tonnenbuck. G'day, David. What are your thoughts on short-stay accommodation and whether the industry needs to change in any way?
We're registered with Airbnb, so we're a bit the same as the last caller. The money's held by Airbnb, so we don't actually, we don't have the money in our bank account to give a full refund, but we go into bat for them to say, look, there's an instant lockdown, and, you know, people have been caught on the highway or the day before, and it's within the cancellation period, and we go into bat for them, but it does take some time because Airbnb is saying, look, we've got a service fee and a charge and whatever, and we say, well, the state government said they cannot come. They are not supposed to be here. So you have to give them a full refund. And they eventually do. But we've had a few lengthy discussions on the phone with Airbnb, but we have managed to give them full refunds.
How do you feel about the fact that Airbnb and Stays, which has confirmed this to me, if you can't negotiate a refund for these people, they hold on to that service fee. So essentially, as a huge conglomerate, they hold on to money for not really doing anything.
Look, you're really dealing with it, like with Airbnb. It's an international organisation, and you do get the runaround. They don't really want to willingly give it up, you know. So you have to be quite forceful as the host to say you have to, in all fairness, refund these people's money.
David, one question, and I'll put this to Glenys, who's still with us as well. Would you be happy as a host, as someone that does this? I mean, do you have just one property that you rent out, or is this a business for you?
No, just one.
Yep. Would you be happy with tighter regulations? Do you feel like it's pretty easy to be an Airbnb host at the moment? Do you feel like even someone that does this, that maybe the horse has bolted and laws need to play catch up?
Well, Airbnb takes about a third of the out price, and they don't really do much other than host the web page, you know, and allow reviews to happen. You know, we have a fairly good relationship because most of our reviews come in very high, or all of the reviews come in high. So it kind of works. It reciprocates it for us. We're not sort of dealing with people directly, and which, you know, we can block it out. We can book when we want. We can say it's too busy at the moment. We don't want to go back to back, you know.
So you've got that flexibility.
Good on you, David. Thank you. Well, let's put that to you, Glenys. Do you think there needs to be stronger restrictions or regulations around how short-stay accommodation works? Maybe, I don't know, even limits on the number of short-stay properties in some areas, or, you know, one uniform cancellation policy across all platforms? What do you think, Glenys?
Look, for us, it's worked extremely well, and I think I have a fantastic relationship with Airbnb. But in saying that, the majority of Airbnb consultants that you speak to on the other phone, on the end of the phone, are mainly hosts, because they're given the opportunity to answer the phone calls, and then if your case needs to be taken up the line, well, then it goes up to management level. So it's a little bit different because the hosts actually understand the situation. I had no issues at all getting refunds for all our guests. That was not a problem. I didn't find that I was on the phone for hours, which was good. And really, we have two properties. I've got a four-bedroom place as well as an apartment. And in terms of the refund policy, when you are actually a super host or you've got those great reviews coming through time and time again, I think guests look for that because they understand that you've got a fully flexible refund policy. You're a super host, so what you're saying and what they're seeing is backed by Airbnb because they, of course, do the investigations. And so I think that gives the guests some support. It's the people who come in that don't provide the cutlery and give you a beanbag to sleep on. They're the ones who probably are putting in moderate or strict cancellation policies and creating a problem for the industry. And I know that if I'm looking for accommodation with Airbnb, I always go super host first and then look for a fully flexible. And then I ask the host, will you actually give me a full refund? Because I know it's possible. So that's what we do.
Good on you, Glenys. Great to speak with you. Thanks so much. Have a Merry Christmas. I hope it all goes well and that you get all of your guests in. It's going to be a busy time for you. That's from Glenys, who's a host in Queenscliff. Amelia Turzon is with you as well, ABC Business Reporter. You're on The Conversation Hour. We're talking about what started out as a disruptor industry to accommodation, so short stays. Now, possibly, as much as we love staying in them and get to stay in beautiful little places, in quaint little towns, are causing some issue. One of those issues that it's causing is actually local accommodation. And we've done entire programs on this with you as well, Amelia, on how locals feel like they're being pushed out of their towns, especially in the sort of surf coast and coastal areas. It's causing a huge problem for work opportunities. People aren't able to get waiting staff, hairdressers, you name it, because there's nowhere for people to live in town. Michael McLeod is the director for First National Real Estate in Cowes. Michael, you must have a love-hate relationship with short stays because you've got them on your books, but you've also got long-term rentals on your books as well. Who's coming out on top?
I'm going to say no one. The fact that it's creating stress for everyone. But people's perception, they're going to do really, really well, but there's just now so many holiday rental properties. There is, and we've got this, people being forced back to domestic travel, so it's creating the urgency on all levels. And we've got no permanent rental. Like the stress that's causing to a normal permanent rental tenant is just, I've never seen it before.
Should there be any limit on the number of Airbnb properties in one area? I noticed that Alpine Shire, the council, is actually calling on residents of places like Bright not to put their places on Airbnb because there's such a worker shortage that they need, you know, accessible long-term accommodation. So should there be a limit on the number of Airbnb properties in some areas?
Look, no one's raised that in the Bass Coast Shire yet. But look, it's a really hard one to quantify. Does a one-bedroom unit on the beach gets preference over a four-bedroom home in an estate? it then gets who gets the right to the existing ones, or it's a really hard question, I think, because if you brought residential one freehold, you're entitled to use it. I think the problem we've got is that the holiday rental, people still get to use their own homes, so they can have that 4 to 6 weeks or 8 weeks of really good income.
Gives them that flexibility.
And then the rest of the year, you've got, and they still get to use it outside the peak times.
Michael, I'm going to play devil's advocate here with you, because this is something that was put to me by the other side when I was researching my recent story. And they said that real estate agents like you, you don't like Airbnb because historically you used to manage all of the beach homes in towns, but now that power has been taken away from you. It's been democratised by individuals listing their own properties online. What do you make of that accusation?
I've actually embraced Airbnb, Stays, Blue Tent. We engage with all the different platforms. So we're in part of that. We have engaged with it. So we're actively in that space now as well.
But you're no longer making as potentially as much commission off managing these beach homes yourself, are you?
Look, yes and no. I just know how much work that goes into doing it between the cleaning, the maintenance and looking after the properties. There's a lot more to it than just here are the keys and go and use my house. There's a lot... The linen, the people's expectations now. Look, with the budgets going up and people's, the holiday rental is becoming more and more expensive. It's not the cheap island getaway or a lot of the regional areas. So
people expect things like cutlery when they arrive now.
And so just couches.
There's a text here from Peter that says, short stay accommodation, many regional and beach towns are struggling for staff or local businesses.
Correct.
It's a big, big factor, the lack of accommodation locally. I think eventually some councils are going to have to restrict the percentage of short stay venues in each area. Would you agree with Peter? Is this something I know that from previous stories that we've done and anecdotally, even just speaking to the woman that runs the local bakery in the main street of Cowes, she's like, I can't get staff because there's nowhere for them to live.
It's we haven't had this before, not to this level. So after COVID, it's amplified it even further. So it probably has to be looked at, but to what level and who gets preference to let their houses out, that's another whole different question.
What about how it changes the local vibe of just a community, you know, living in a community? If you've got places that are being bought and then being used only as short stays, and when people want to use it as a holiday house, do you lose that sense of localism?
You lose the whole community feel. So that's something that Phil Pollan's been brilliant for the fact that if something ever happens or someone needs help, there's somebody there. If you've got all absentee owners, that changes the whole vibe. It's creating a really an us and a them scenario, which it shouldn't, but that's it's just talking about different demographics then, so it really does change the whole playing field. So it's a hard one. It really is to, once again, that people can afford to pay it so they get that benefit or that privilege.
Michael, have you heard of any people who own homes using the law in any ways to lock out Airbnb? I'm thinking of this because I did a story earlier this year where an apartment block, the developers are intentionally putting things into their strata to get Airbnb out of the buildings. They think it causes problems such as party homes and excess wear and tear. Have you heard of any people in your sector trying to use the law to stop Airbnbs?
Not yet, but it is that there's a terminology, quiet enjoyment, and their rules are very strict. And then the reviews have changed with Airbnb as well. So if you get a certain amount of reviews and complaints on both the home owners and the tenants, they can actually stop them. So we are moving towards that. I haven't seen anything in the Bass Coast, but I've heard about it in other areas, like in Byron Bay and other complexes in Melbourne, but nothing on the island as yet.
Good on you, Michael. Thank you for your time today. Michael McLeod, Director for First National Real Estate in Cowes on the beautiful Phillip Island. And lots of people on the text line saying we've had really good dealings with Airbnb and short stay services. So this one from Cherry saying we booked to be near a hospital. It was our hospital's, the surgery was rescheduled and the B&B owners were very understanding and would happily have refunded. But because of Airbnb rules, they were unable to refund anything with less than 24 hours notice. But yeah, other people like Mark saying we booked an Airbnb on the Gold Coast that was cancelled due to lockdown. We were given full credit and our books to go again in June. We lost no money and the airline also gave us full credit.
I guess that just highlights, though, doesn't it, that now the power has gone back into the hands of the host. And this is sort of something that only changed in around 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. But what I find fascinating, if I'm trying to find a glass half full situation here, let's look at some of our smaller regional communities around Victoria where lots of people go and stay now. Now, previously, there might have been four rooms at the top of the pub, maybe with a shared bathroom, you know, my idea of a living nightmare, but that was about the only place you could stay. Now, look at Lock, okay? So this is a gorgeous, thriving little community where people go and spend weekends or spend a week. If it wasn't for short stays accommodation, it would still just be day trip and day visitors.
And yeah, there's lots of little areas like that. And these platforms have shone a light on some of the more unique parts of Victoria and unique accommodation styles, you know, staying in tin sheds and all those.
Well, you stay somewhere totally random just recently.
I had a very random experience a few weeks ago with my parents, actually. We were going to sail to see the Archibald Prize, and there was, like many things at the moment, nothing listed for sale. We ended up in a tiny little town about 25 minutes from sale in quite a cute little unit. It was very warm and sweet and really affordable. We would have never have gone there if it hadn't been for
Airbnb. And did you spend time in the town then? Did you go in and...
It wasn't really much in said town. I do believe we went to the petrol station, so we pumped a little bit of money into the town. But it is, it takes you on these journeys to different people, to different towns, sorry. And I sometimes like going on some of these websites and just typing in general areas and seeing what comes up. Or if you can find little fun little places. I went to Bor earlier this year just because of this.
So my girlfriend does that when I holiday with her. She's got this great little technique. You have to do it. If you're somewhere, she just puts in closest waterfall and then you go and you spend, you know, an hour or two in the car and you go for a walk around that little area. You check out the beautiful waterfall. You have lunch somewhere. And it's just like this keyword search. It's great.
It's good unless you're going to somewhere like the Wimmera, I think. Then you might struggle a little bit. But yeah, most areas would be really good. That's a great way to do it. Let's have a chat now with Ian, who is in Geelong. G'day, Ian. What are you thinking?
Hi. I'm just relating my experience with travel. Last year, at the start of the pandemic time, in about February, I made a booking for a number of places in the United States. And at that stage, it was okay for us to be able to travel. I was going to compete in the Alcatraz swimming event from the prison into the shore in San Francisco.
Wow.
It was unfortunately, my bookings were mostly hotels. We had a 5-week holiday around a number of places in the US, but the start of the trip was going to be San Francisco, then another swimming event in Washington, and then heading down further south and it going around to a number of other places. I did all my bookings through a travel agent for the flights and any transfers. I did all the bookings for the accommodation. The accommodation, I only did two Airbnbs. One was in San Francisco. The other one was in Nashville. The one in Nashville, the guy was fabulous. He, even given the difference in time between Australia and the US, the money was back in my account. Within the refund was back in within an hour.
But the one in San Fran,
The guy in San Fran decided that through communication with him online that he said he was going to keep the deposit that I'd paid and said that he'd personally lost money.
Yeah, right. Gosh, it just goes to show, too, the differences of what you've got with just two... You know, just two
starkly different hosts.
There.
And it's interesting because some companies, they're drawing this line in the sand on this issue. They're coming up with their own overarching policies. One of the companies I spoke to for my investigation today, they manage roughly 300 Airbnbs across the country in the high-end market. They get lots of Hollywood celebrities. And they have decided that they will no longer give refunds, but also they will charge people to rebook. They've had problems initiating this policy with Airbnb, but they do this on their own website. So they've just had to come in and go, enough is enough. You know, we know COVID's a thing. We know that you book at your own risk and we can't keep taking the hit.
Connor is in Kilmore. G'day, Connor. What's your experience?
Good morning. Well, I've been a host for many years with Airbnb, and Airbnb made a fortune the last couple of years by keeping their part of the booking fee, even when we refunded 100% of everything that we could. But the point that I wanted to make is that Airbnb has a devastating effect on smaller country towns.
In what way?
It's very, very tempting to rent your house out for 6 weeks of the year and get the same income as you can for 52, which means that it then sits empty for the remaining 46. Yeah. So if you're a small town and you run a supermarket or a restaurant or whatever, it's having a huge impact on them. And so all these houses will sit around empty, and I've got direct experience.
Absolutely. And this is what we were just talking about, Connor, is that people can't get employment, people can't find somewhere to live, and locals are leaving their town. But as someone that's a host, do you not feel a little bit guilty about that?
Not really, because I rented mine out all year round. But I can see where it is very tempting for people. And I think ultimately this is going to have a cycle. The tax office takes a very dim view of people negatively gearing a property and then having lots of quiet enjoyment of it. So it's not as if a lot of people can rent it out for a short period of time and then have it available for themselves for the rest of the time, because that's not how negative gearing works.
And what about running it, if it's almost running like a business for a lot of people, should it not be treated as a small business? I mean, I don't even think, do you have an ABN?
I don't actually know. No, you don't have to have an ABN.
No, you don't. You don't.
No.
So is that something that should change, do you think?
I'm not too sure.
Well, there's a text.
The impact on the supermarkets is a very, very real one for a lot of these towns.
Yeah, good on you, Connor. Thank you. There's a text here who does think there should be changes. This text says people who have Airbnb should be charged as if they have a business. So like you were saying there, Rich, this person thinks they should have an ABN and be charged as such. But at the moment, in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of the tax office, an Airbnb property or a property that's used for Airbnb rentals is just seen as an investment property. It's the same thing as having a long-term rental.
1300 222 774. Maybe you're a host and you want to ring in and you want to state your case as well, or if it's had an impact on you, either from leaving reviews, cancellations, or if it's having an impact on the town that you live in. Amelia Turzon is with you as well, ABC business reporter. But anecdotally, Jono and Amelia, what I had heard as well from people that had had issues with getting their money back and having to actually engage lawyers as well to try and get their money back. So in the end, it ends up costing them more money. But I think it was, you know, it's a principle, God damn it, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. But they were saying that it's causing huge problems in the States, in the United States, because it's clogging up their court system, their equivalent, I guess, of VCAT. Because if there is no law governing this, then where else are you going to take it than somewhere like a small claims tribunal?
And we've all tried to go to VCAT, and it's not easy, it's not cheap, and it takes a really long time.
And I think that's what people bank on, though. Don't they?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So that if it is a dispute over $300, are you going to, you know, employ legal representatives or take it through the courts? I don't know. Probably not. Mark Stanarevic is a lawyer with Martix Legal and can answer some of the hairy legal questions that have presented themselves today. G'day, Mark.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Why is there limited consumer law protection for people who rent out short-stay accommodation, particularly around cancellation policies?
Look, everyone's afforded the right under the Australian Consumer Law, and as you correctly pointed out, there is VCAT. If you're in Victoria, the equivalent in Queensland's QCAT, in New South Wales, there's NCAT. So basically, it really comes down to time and also motivation. And if people sometimes have to pay a filing fee. Now, if you're under a disadvantage or you're not working, often these tribunals, they can actually dispense with a filing fee. But look, you are afforded rights. And a lot of people also turn to their credit card providers as well if there are disputes around, typically, if there's been a quality of service that's been promised and it hasn't been provided. Sometimes people actually complain to their credit card providing respective chargebacks. So there are different avenues. So in respect of being able to essentially do something about it. It really comes down to how much money people have suffered a loss on and whether it's worth their time, more than in terms of legal options, I think.
And what about the idea of letters being presented to people to say, for example, you want to cancel your booking because of bushfire threats or whatever it may be, or because of COVID, and they say, well, yes, I'll give you your money back, but only if you sign this letter that says that you won't leave a bad review. Does that hold up? Is that legal?
Look, there's a public policy in respect of any sort of contracts being signed. There's a public policy component. You can't really sign under duress or illegality. My view is if that was challenged and person essentially signed under duress, that could be overturned. But look, essentially that's really some people on the outskirts, I think, might be doing that in general. People tend to take a common sense approach. But my advice would be if anyone was forced to sign a disclaimer like that or a release, not to do that. And if they have difficulties in obtaining a refund, definitely they can make an application through a tribunal, or even easier, they could contact Consumer Affairs Victoria, for example, or the interstate equivalents. They can actually advocate on behalf of people in terms of those situations as well.
Yeah, Mark, we've heard from people this morning who haven't got what they paid for. They didn't get what was on the box. You know, I think it was Ali earlier who said she was told on the ads that she would have couches and there was a TV, etc. And she turned up to the place and there were beanbags and no TV. So why, or does the law, is the law playing catch up here because things have moved so quickly around short stays?
In respect of misleading, what you're describing there is a classical example of potentially bait and switch or misleading and deceptive conduct. I mean, those provisions were in the old Trade Practices Act many years ago, when we've got the Australian Consumer Law now, Australia-wide. But look, people have clear recourse. The question is capturing that evidence. So my advice would be to essentially save those screenshots on your phone, download it, and also if you go to the property and it's totally out of context in terms of what it's been represented, you would have a case for a refund.
And Mark, what about the whole like economy? You know, we sort of revolve around reviews now and whether or not we trust reviews, whether they're real. Are people using reviews to maybe try and badmouth competition? People will flood reviews, even text lines, you know, if there is almost a form of a protest around that particular person. Where do we stand when it comes to the like economy and what people have said about us or about the host?
Look, that's a very good point. It's a very dicey situation. Recently, it's been brought to the media's attention of a famous surgeon who was allegedly paying for likes in the media in respect of, seeking reviews to be removed, my correction. And that's been allegedly occurring by some people in different aspects of the community, business community. At the end of the day, those things can happen. And people have to essentially just do their own good old groundwork and not just rely upon reviews because, yes, reviews can be bought on places like Fiverr, or people will just doing that.
Get
sometimes
your mates to do it. Hey, Mark, is there...
Competitors would actually do that to destroy a competitor. They'll create fake reviews, which is extremely harmful.
And, Mark, what if you slam someone in a review? Is there even any potential that they could sue you for defamation? Have you heard of cases like that?
Yes, and I've acted on both sides with cases in that respect.
Who have you won for?
Well, I've actually sued people who've essentially defamed my client, and also I've defended situations where there's been an element of truth. And essentially, in respect of defamation, I mean, what most people have to apply is a common sense test. If you do make an allegation, make sure you've got a factual basis to back it up, because at the end of the day, it's the person who makes the defamatory allegation or the allegation in truth that has to back it up.
Wow, what a world, Airbnb defamation cases.
Well, this is interesting. I mean, we're hearing that in the States it's clogging up the court system. We know that there is a backlog at VCAT already, thanks to COVID. We're all travelling locally and we're probably staying more than ever at places like stays and Airbnb. Do you see on the cards, Mark, a similar situation to the States? Are we going to have a backlog at our court system for people trying to settle these disputes?
Possibly not. I don't see Australia as litigious as America. Like in terms of America, you see a lot of cases like uncapped class actions where people are getting awarded hundreds of millions of dollars. Here you've seen with the pushback in terms of class actions. It's a lot more conservative, the culture of Australia in terms of America. And there's a lot more lawyers there and people who are willing to take on cases at risk. And I think that's why there is a lot more litigation, plus the population density as well and the population size. But the problem is everyone has access to information now, which is also a double-edged sword, because how do you know the difference between good information and bad information?
Yeah, which is such a big debate, and we've been having it for months now, Mark. But if you could make sure that we don't go down the path of America where we are so litigious and we're all suing each other, that'd be good, okay? Is that all right?
Please.
Pressure.
Fantastic. Let's make a happier world.
Thanks, you wouldn't Mark. Have a lot of work, though. That sounds down.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, Mark we'll do mediations. That's fine for us, boys.
Mark Stanarevic, lawyer with Martix Legal. And it is a bit of a prickly area, which I mean, this is just me editorialising here, Rish, but I don't feel like the law has properly caught up with some of these disruptors, you know, even things like Uber Eats and some of the new app-based services. Yeah. I don't think we have...
Oh, it's happened in so many areas. I mean, we're only just seeing that now with changes to outing trolls on social media and who's responsible for someone being absolutely horrific to you online. Up until now, there was nothing you could do. Do you go to the police? Has anyone ever tried to call Facebook? Let's just say there is no phone number and no one's answering that line.
It is fair to say that this issue is hitting traditional companies as well, essentially during COVID. For instance, my personal experience, I was one of the many Australians who's received a flight credit for a flight I couldn't take recently due to COVID. I booked through a third-party flight website and they gave me a credit. But when I went to rebook, not only did they have to check which flight I could be on and whether they allowed me to rebook on that flight, they also tried to slug me with a $30 rebooking fee. I refused to pay it, and they said, all right, we won't make you pay it. That's not regulated. That is a standard corporation. It's pre-Airbnb. So it really does affect all areas of business during COVID at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, good point. Kel is in Beechworth. G'day, Kel. How are you going?
Good
what's
guys.
Your yeah, what's good. Your experience?
Hey, yeah, well, I was a past operator of a hosted guest house. I grew up in the town. We done the house up and we were very successful. But as a group, in those days, as a hosted group, we all worked together. But more importantly, we all sponsored the town as far as festivals, sporting clubs. I'm seeing it now. People who are buying these old homes in Beechworth, which is good. I want to see the town thrive and go ahead. But I don't think these people put in any money, or they're not even here to go on committee.
Oh, yeah. How would you regulate that, Kel? Because that's such a good point. I mean, imagine if you said, you can buy this place and you can rent it out, but you've got to sponsor the footy club.
Yep.
Or you've got to be a CFA volunteer.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
All the festivals we have here, we have a lot of them, and they're just thriving festivals, and people love them. But, look, it's good to get bums in bed, but we're just it's the other side of it. I'm really worried about it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Thank you. There's a text here that says, I'm a super host in beautiful Venus Bay. It's only the greedy ones that give us a bad name. Our guests are our priority and we go above and beyond. Short stays have kept the community going through COVID. We also offer longer stays too, if that's possible, depending on through your provider. It's really double-edged, isn't it? I mean, if like Kel said in Beechworth, if you could find a way that beautiful old homes are not getting pulled down or they're not sort of going into disrepair, and they're being renovated, people are staying in there, but you put a clause in that they somehow have to volunteer or give some money to the local community, or I don't know how you do it.
Well, the other side of the coin would be, what do we put hotels in tiny towns to drive people to go there and experience these towns? Do we want to put hotels in there? They're also owned by corporations. They also might not put the money into the town.
And the chances are they're not going to, that hotels aren't going to be in these tiny towns.
So Rural Council's Victoria Deputy Chair Jenny O'Connor has described this, just exactly what you're talking about, as a wicked problem. She says the housing shortage, it's a problem because councils want to encourage tourism to stimulate their economies, but it's contributing to the shortage of workers required to serve the holidaymakers. So it's a real catch-22. Let's have a chat with Colin, who is in Castlemaine. G'day, Colin.
G'day. We did a new build recently, and we originally built it with the intention of having it as a rental, full-time rental. But due to the experiences of friends of ours who had some very bad tenants and couldn't get rid of the tenants, couldn't get their rent, and it became such a stressful situation that it was affecting their health, we thought, you know what, we'll try it as a B&B and see how it goes, because the law, tenancy laws changed in Victoria recently and they're heavily favouring the tenant. And if you get a dud, you can't get rid of them. And, you know, we're on the just on the outskirts of Castlemaine in a rural area, and we've got livestock in the paddocks next door, and we say no pets policy because of the, you know, the livestock next door. But if you've got a tenant, you can't stipulate no pets. And even our two little domestic dogs have wreaked havoc on kangaroos that, you know, we didn't realise that they got to before we got to them.
Colin, so, you know what's interesting? Castlemaine, in the area that you're in, that was kind of like the first really popular area where lots of people stayed for weekends. Lots of people bought weekend properties
there.
And
Dalesford as well.
Oh, yeah, it was called the North Northcote, you know, for a while. But, I mean, this was Castlemaine. I guess we have a lot to learn from your area. Do you feel like some people had concerns that you lose the community spirit and vibe and that there's not going to be enough places for people to live and work? Castlemaine has kind of been living like this for a very long time. Is the sense of community lost?
I don't believe so. There's so much development on the outskirts of Castlemaine. Unfortunately, it resembles some of the, you know, high-density developments you see on the outskirts of Melbourne. But, look, I don't think so. We in our compendium, we reference many places in town for people to eat and things to do. So we really try to guide them. And we live on the property as well. So we really try to guide them to
and
the
you're
local.
You're there and you can keep an eye on it. Good on you. Thank you, Colin. Amelia Turzon, thank you so much. This is a story that we know that's been on the tally bulletins tonight, and it's something that you've been covering for some time. And whilst we were on air, you've had a few phone calls.
No, I've even had one from Airbnb themselves. I'll have to go answer that call.
No, but they've declined to be interviewed for your stories, haven't they?
They did decline to be interviewed. They even refused to answer questions directly. So maybe
you might have a long voicemail now, though.
Maybe they might give me some more answers in 12:05.
Gee, I hope, because, I mean, and the big thing is that they don't confirm, also they don't refund service fees, which I think, I mean, if you think about that, that's hundreds of millions of dollars, isn't it?
A lot of money. Amelia, as always, thank you so much for joining us in the conversation.
Absolute pleasure.
If you've missed some of the conversation today, or you've been listening and thinking, oh, look, I know someone who really should listen to this, you can get this on podcast. The Conversation Hour is available wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
And you can always email us as well if you have a person or an idea that you'd like to share with us. Our email address, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Till we speak to you next time, take care and speak soon.